for everyone who has made this festival festive, as usual. It's obligatory to say this, but we're not saying it just as a formality. We all appreciate, isn't it? I mean, that's why you come here year after year, to get the Association of Devotees who are contributing in various ways by speaking, by hearing, by singing, by dancing, by cooking, by purchasing, by giving donations, by serving prasadam, by looking after the children, so many ways. So, Hare Krishna. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. This should be the last installment of this ongoing discussion of properly citing Srila Prabhupada. There should even be time for questions and discussion at the end. Continuing following the observations of Satsarup Das Goswami, he cites another misuse of Srila Prabhupada's authority is in trying to imitate rather than following in his footsteps. He cites the two words in Sanskrit, anukaran, anusaran, imitation and following in the footsteps, which means following the example. And then he states, we should not imitate the Ishvaras. This is following the verses of Bhagavatam, 10th canto, in relation to the Rasalila, in which it's stated that the Ishvaras, referring to Lord Shiva, who drinks the ocean of poison, is not to be imitated. We should follow Ishvaranam Vacham Satyam. One should follow their words, but don't try to imitate their behavior. Otherwise, we will be destroyed. Then he goes on, Satsarup Das Goswami goes on to ask the obvious question, what does it mean to follow? What's the difference between following? In other words, what's the difference between following and imitating? Follow means to follow his instructions on how to do, on how to behave. And to do this, we have to know what his instructions are. It's so simple, it's so obvious that it might sound unnecessary to state it. But there are many, many instructions of Srila Prabhupada, behavioral instructions, which are scattered here and there, not in a systematic way. So that's one task, to compile them all, which I have done a lot of work on, but that's yet to be finished and published. We have to read his books and associate with his movement. Now, when this was written, to associate with his movement, the state of his movement, when we say his movement, we generally mean ISKCON. What we understand to be ISKCON. There are others who say that, there's one website in which there's a big banner at the top saying ISKCON is where anyone is chanting Hare Krishna, giving a very broad definition. This is supposed to be a quote from Srila Prabhupada. I'm not sure if it is. Associate with his movement, there was a time in his movement where, in terms of behavior of devotees, I'm talking about what accepted behavioral standards, rising early in the morning, taking only prasadam, devotees living in the temples. It was pretty much accepted all over the world. Not that I traveled all over the world, but being based in London in the mid-1970s, we used to meet devotees from all over the world. And it was often discussed, the phenomenon of how you can go to any ISKCON center all over the world, and it's you can just slot in very easily because it's the same mood everywhere, more or less the same mood of wanting to serve Srila Prabhupada, accepting Srila Prabhupada as the empowered acharya of the world. We were very, very simple in those days, in the sense that we only knew Srila Prabhupada, and we didn't know so many books had not been translated or written. One major factor in the development of ISKCON culture, which is not often recognized, it's not so obvious, is that Kusha Kratha Prabhu translated many, many books, Vaishnava books, and devotees became aware of many of the works of the previous acharyas. So that that led some devotees to seek to enter into the esoteric stages. And actually, before that, Dasharatha Sutta had already translated some books. But then afterwards, after translating a few of these esoteric works, he restricted the sales and wrote some warning things that, wait a minute, don't get too excited too soon. These are very confidential matters, not meant for everyone. So, and to associate with his movement, another difference at the time, I believe that I should have checked it, but Sasru Das Goswami wrote this not very long after Srila Prabhupada's disappearance from this world. I especially decided to make this discussion during this camp in the wake of pronounced differences of opinion on what it means to follow Srila Prabhupada by various camps of devotees within his movement. So it's a vital question how to understand Srila Prabhupada and not misquote him. And Sasru Das Goswami writes, it is important that we ourselves become good examples of his teachings. So that's, apart from quoting Srila Prabhupada, there's that's called practice and precept. Instruction is by practice and precept. Precept means instruction. Maybe you've heard the, it's not a very common word, maybe you've heard the word preceptorial line. It's another way of saying disciplic succession. But it puts the emphasis on the instructor and the instruction. And practice means, instruction is by practice and precept. That means telling someone to do something and acting in a manner that others are expected to follow. Just as parents instruct children, much of what children learn is not exactly by being told what to do, but just following what they see everyone else doing around them, especially their parents. And formal instruction has to be given also. So that's the meaning of the word acharya, especially is linked with the word acharan, which means behavior. So that definition of acharya is given, achinoti ashastrani. Achare sthapyatyapi swayam acharite yasmad acharyastena kirtitaha. One who knows the import of shastra teaches that to others verbally, and personally acts in the same way that he teaches. So he teaches by practice and precept. So another way to misuse Srila Prabhupada's authority is to, while presenting oneself as a representative of Srila Prabhupada, to act in a manner that is not properly representative of him. That's a great duty, great responsibility of all those who would claim themselves to be followers of Srila Prabhupada to set an ideal example. Then he goes on to point out, Satsurup Das Goswami, I'm skipping some parts, he said that we have to follow the letter and the spirit of his most essential teachings. There's a saying, the letter of the law and the spirit of the law. You probably have a saying, something like that, in your languages. Maybe not, after being under socialism or communism. There's just the law, that's all. That's what we understood. But there may be, it may be that someone has made an offense, but generally a first-time offender is treated leniently by the law. They may be excused, even though they should be punished, and just given a warning so as not to so as not to crush their spirit, and give them a chance, give them a fair go, as they say. Follow the letter of the law, but then sometimes we may break the rule or not follow the rule to better serve Krishna. For instance, it's just about time for Mangalati. We're just getting ready to go, and a devotee in the temple suddenly has a severe health condition, a stroke or something like that, and then driving to hospital immediately. Oh, but I can't miss Mangalarti. That doesn't make sense. Or you can't be chastised for missing Mangalarti in such a circumstance. So that's an extreme example. I would hope that no one would just leave a devotee having had a stroke and said, well, okay, we'll take you after. No, I have to go after Japapri. I can't miss Japapri. Can't miss class. And in the meantime, he's dead. And they say he's contaminating the whole temple, being dead. Well, that's an extreme example, but there may be others also. A devotee is sick. Should we force him to go to Mangalarti? Is he just feigning it or what? Brahmananda Prabhu, I remember, he told us once that Srila Prabhupada said do you remember this? You must have heard that. The only excuse for not going to Mangalarti is to be dead. So the letter and the spirit. And he goes on to ask, what rights do those in a position of authority have over others? Yeah, that's what Prabhupada said, that the only excuse for not going to Mangalarti is to be dead. Yeah, but don't quote that, because it's one of those, you know, not so reliable. And I may have remembered it wrongly myself. And then he goes on to discuss again that a leader's power is more in his ability to give guidance rather than forcing, cajoling, or manipulating devotees into obeying his instructions. I would say that's a bit idealistic. Sometimes the leaders have to crack the whip a bit, not just give good instruction, Meanwhile, the devotee is inside his sleeping bag and not listening to the instruction, not wanting to get up in the morning. Shortly after I joined the movement, I witnessed the spectacle of a devotee being thrown down the stairs in his sleeping bag, refusing to get out of it, risking his bones being broken. You know who that was, by any chance? One of your good friends, one of the gurus in ISKCON today. Huh? No, not Jananda Maharaj. He wouldn't do it. I'll tell you afterwards. That was at Berry Place, where we had steep stairs. And then little time after that, there was another case of that in Bhaktivedanta Manor in the Brahmachari Ashram. Someone, a brahmachari, refusing to get up for Mangalati, being dragged, it's quite a long bit, maybe further than from here to here, from the far brahmachari room into the shower, being thrown into the shower in his sleeping bag, still refusing to get out. Sorry, I'm not going to get out. We used to take good care of the brahmacharis in those days. I asked him about that later, and fairly recently, and he said, "Oh yeah. I met him recently. We had a good laugh about it." So, take the letter on the spirit. So, listening carefully, Sankirtan, you have devotees don't get up for Mangalati. So, tips for temple presidents. But actually, unless someone's actually sick, and if they don't want to get, they shouldn't be in the Brahmachari ashram. They should be in the Grihastha ashram. Then you can sleep as long as you like. It's not recommended, but there's no one to get you up except having to go to work. He quotes the saying, there's the saying that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. But he qualifies it by saying, if we're truly representing Srila Prabhupada, that shouldn't happen. Just as Srila Prabhupada didn't become corrupted by the tremendous power that he had over his disciples. Not the power of fear. Not the power of payment. You don't do it, you don't do the work properly, and you don't have a job. But the power of faith, that by following Srila Prabhupada, doing what he says, our best interests will be served. The power of love. Absolute power corrupts absolutely, but that didn't happen in the case of Srila Prabhupada. It didn't go to his head, as the saying goes. I'm quoting a lot of English idioms today. He didn't become intoxicated by that. So if we're truly representing Srila Prabhupada, One who is in a position of authority exercises that authority, always thinking that I'm a servant of Srila Prabhupada, I've been given the service to engage others. But, as he points out, Sasrav Das Goswami points out, there's always the danger of being contaminated by a sense of prestige. But if we always remember that I am simply servant of the servant of Srila Prabhupada, then we don't become victims of this offense. He states it to be an offense to misuse the position that one has been entrusted with. Then he makes another point, many very thoughtful points he's given in this essay, which I've almost finished going through. We have to find the balance between attention to our own personal following, in this case means personal, not followers, but following of the principles and practice of Krishna consciousness, and our willingness to help maintain the standards that Srila Prabhupada taught. We can't force people, we can't force devotees to follow the standards. But we can't also be, we shouldn't be afraid to stand up and say, this is the standard. We can't enforce the standard, well, in the ashrams, in the brahmachari ashram, yeah, there should be some enforcement. And the main enforcement should be that those who are not willing to follow the standards should not be admitted to live in the brahmachari ashram. It's a privilege, not a right. Those who are not prepared to follow all the rules and regulations and submit themselves as a disciple should not be initiated. It's a privilege, not a right. Especially for devotees who are living independently, that means grihasthas, those who are living independently and not married, they should, better that they marry, take responsibility, be responsible, don't just live by yourself, for yourself. They have a large measure of independence compared to devotees who live in an ashram, and in traditional Vedic society, grihasthas, brahmanas, they also lived just all around the temple. There's a housing colony of brahmana grihasthas in South India. It's called the Agraharam. And they would also have to maintain brahminical standards while living there. And of course, they're expected to maintain that outside also. If they go outside, many of them wouldn't go outside at all. They'd just stay there. Their service is to serve the deity. And they would go from the temple to their home. Their home is where they eat and sleep and deal with their family affairs. And most of the time, they'd be in the temple. And it's just from the temple to home. And they don't go anywhere else. That's all. And they're fully satisfied in doing that. So that's the mode of goodness. We still see today there are many Brahmins in South India, especially. Not only in South India, but they could be earning money, they have good Brahmin brains, but they're quite content to be in the temple and get whatever stipend they get for supporting their family. And they have to be in the mode of goodness, because most of the day they're standing in front of the deity. And in the morning they'll do some puja and recite some mantras and this and that. Then all day they're standing there and people come for darshan, and they give them some charanamrita and tell them about the glories of the deity. And they do it again and again and again and again, maybe hundreds of times a day, every day. And they're quite happy to do so. It's not that they're doing it as a job. We know they're happy to do so because when we, they're actually devotional, because when we come, generally when our ISKCON devotees come, and they're very happy to see us. Sometimes if we're not doing kirtan, they ask us to do kirtan, and so on. Many devotees, they automatically follow the rules and the standards of behavior. But those who don't, we have to consider how to try to convince them. In the brahmachari ashram, some pressure should be there if someone is not willing to follow. In fact, if someone refuses to, they should be out. If they're not willing to follow, they're not fit to live in the brahmachari ashram. They're not willing to follow instructions, not willing to follow the basic sadhana program and basic service standards. Others who are not willing to listen to us, well, we can't force them, but we can state This is the proper standard. Srila Prabhupada gave this standard. This is according to Shastra. And Srila Prabhupada said this. This is the proper standard. And he goes on to state, Satsrupa Goswami, that we have to be loving in our dealings as Prabhupada was loving with us, not just walking law books. And then he closes the essay by stating that part of our pure following of Srila Prabhupada is to ensure that his parampara message is properly transmitted. Which brings us round in a circle back to the point, what does it mean to properly cite Srila Prabhupada? So that we have to see in context, according to Shastra, Guru Sadhu Shastra, checks and balances. And the result has to be seen. Phalena Parichyate. How people are becoming Krishna conscious and following Krishna conscious and following the rules and regulations, taking Krishna conscious very seriously. Even in the matter of following, it might be seen that, well, someone's a great preacher, they have so many disciples, but the disciples are not really disciples in as much as there's not much discipline for them. There's, by lowering standards, we might be able to bring more people in. On the other hand, if we're very strict and very few people come, there may be only one or two disciples or followers. And we may pride ourselves that we're very strict, but then the Krishna conscious movement doesn't spread. So it may be elusive to say this is the correct way to follow Srila Prabhupada, but ultimately it has to be said in various issues. Someone has to take a stand. Can we eat chocolate? Should devotees eat chocolate or not? If you say, well, maybe, maybe not. Well, that means, yes, you can. Because if you're not clear on the issue, then it will be taken as a default that it's okay. If you're not clear, then it means it's not, there's no clear injunction against it. It's not such a big thing or important thing. Anyway, I don't think it's such a big thing. I'm just giving that example again and again. Although it could be taken as such a big thing, because we should only take food that's offered to Krishna. We should only offer to Krishna what he likes. And many points, many points. One thing I'm strict on, or I try to inculcate a sense of strictness in, is only taking, devotees should only take food offered to Krishna. You may think, well, grihasthas, they have some license, but traditionally, no Vaishnava. If they're going to be initiated, that means now I'm following. Now I belong here. So one of the rules is you don't take food that's not offered to Krishna. You may have to fast, but you just don't do that. Fruit may be taken, offered mentally, and this and that, but it's just part of being a Vaishnava. So we can be very loose in following all these things, but that will act against our advancing in Krishna consciousness. If we have deities in the home and we take food which is not offered to them or not offerable to them, or we go out to eat in a restaurant because we want to eat something palatable to the tongue, then we make an offense against the deities. If we feed ourselves nicely, but we don't feed them nicely, it becomes an offense. So, many points to consider. I've finished this presentation now, and if there are any questions or comments, I'm open to them. You'd like to say something more? Could be so many things to say about this. Yeah, there's no extra mic. Taken already. Barathiyatra. Okay, so please Say, and I'll repeat it if necessary. Or what you could do. Oh no, you're translating simultaneously. Okay.
Sometimes certain issues the devotees take it very lightly, as if it's almost like a joke. For instance, you pointed out chocolate is almost like a joke, because they don't really do very much research into the different points that go into that particular issue. On the other hand, things that are actually jokes that really are not very important for one's devotion service. Sometimes the devotees take this very serious. They even dedicate their lives in debating with each other over something that has no real significance in their spiritual advance.
Like? Maybe?
So, we have to, I was probably right, as I was before, line following and absurd inquiries are condemned. One should not only get a clear understanding, one should not only hear submissively, but one should get a clear understanding through submission, service, and inquiry.
Mm.
We have to know what's actually worthy of inquiry, what we should actually surrender ourselves to, and what will actually lead to the goal of actually developing humble love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And if we don't do that, then we can, you know, get very much absorbed in things that are actually not going to help us very much. And we'll do that things that will actually help us.
I may rephrase that as, what constitutes a principle and what constitutes a detail? Often we hear that principles are inviolable, but details are flexible. But then what someone takes as a principle, someone else may take as a detail, and vice versa.
Given out a very good example, but something of an example, because you mentioned chocolate a number of times in your different lectures.
Mm.
But I was the one who wrote the resolution, which is actually only a guideline. It's not really a law in this time, but it was a guideline. But that's after doing research for a good amount of time.
Mm.
And I discovered that chocolate is not, there's not only one kind of chocolate, but chocolate is not only made in the same way. Besides discovering about the insects apparently eating when you're eating chocolate.
Sorry, I couldn't understand. There are different kinds of chocolate which are made in different ways?
Yeah, chocolate powder coming from the cocoa tastes terrible. It's super bitter. But in order to make it palatable, they add different things. And one of the things that is added in certain countries in the world that are very popular for chocolate is sometimes they add cow's blood. You know, to make it more rich. So, if one is eating chocolate, one does not know how much one is actually becoming implicated in the laws of donation.
Mm. And generally, the companies, they'll mix all kinds of cocoa beans or whatever from all different sources, is it? These big companies?
Mm. But I did find that the things I found out about is sometimes the ingredients are, you know, meat products and products of slaughter.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah.
It is, although there was some debate about whether it had caffeine or not, it has a number of other theobromine and other elements where I...
Yeah. In general, processed food bought from commies is always dangerous because what they put in it, you can't be sure. And according to laws in America, as far as I know, you just said that there's a 10% threshold. In chocolate, if you go beyond 10% insect contents, then you have to declare it. That means the chocolate you could be eating could be 9% insects. And they may put all kinds of things in it or process it in various ways. The meat products are almost ubiquitous everywhere. So the best thing is go to the land, grow your own food, offer it to Krishna. And even fertilizers, you buy fertilizers, they may be made, even organic food is often grown with organic fertilizer. That means ground up chicken bones and things. That's organic. It's not vegetarian. So be careful.
You mentioned that this book, you always be very different. Srila Prabhupada said different things regarding some issues. But what, and it's good to quote, to give everything.
Yeah, on a complex issue, it's good to. If you're making a presentation, to cite what those of, this is standard procedure in debate, not only anywhere in the world, that one should take into account the opposing arguments and evidence and counter them or contextualize them. Otherwise, if you just take one quote, just like I saw a video a few days ago, which one of Srila Prabhupada's oldest disciples read out a quote from Srila Prabhupada, you should not see these rascal astrologers. He said, okay, finished, it's clear from Prabhupada. But he did not take into account the so many other quotes in which... And then the very fact that astrology is a Vedic science, which Srila Prabhupada elsewhere states, is it's an important science like this. So how do we contextualize this? Well, don't see a rascal astrologer. Find a good one if you can. If another one, devotees have nothing to do with this, with astrology, but... Well, I'm just giving some. I'm sure Prahladananda Swami could give much more, as he's. I'm not really much into astrology, but I'm not again. I'm not against it. I recommend it, but Prahladananda Maharaj knows a lot about this, and well, especially for householders who may not be able to fully surrender in the same way. They have a lot more dealings with the material world than sannyasis. And even traditionally in, at least in the Madhva Sampradaya, probably in a, because they have boy sannyasis. They make sannyasis out of boys, 8 years old and this and that. So they astrologically check first if they're going to be able to make it. And they have a good record. So just to take one quote, ignore it. Well, actually, I started this whole chocolate thing because in the first session, I quoted Garga Muni with one quote from Prabhupada, and they said, okay, chocolate's okay. Just overlooking all the other possible evidence. So that's how I got onto the chocolate thing. So that's two examples in that lecture he gave of in one sense, it's not misquoting because he did quote accurately what Srila Prabhupada said. He read it out. But then it's a misquote in the sense that he either was unaware or didn't take the trouble to become aware or just ignored the other quotes, the other evidence, just taking one side of an issue.
A lot of times we are like bound by some time frame, like we give a lecture like 30 minutes, 40 minutes, or there is some.
No, you may not be. Yeah, if you just have a half hour lecture, then you may not. That's different to making a presentation where you're giving either written or spoken, in which you're giving the a comprehensive overview of a particular topic. Then in a lecture, you may just quote such and such, such and such, and not get into the details. It's not that every point that you have to stop and cover it up with dozens of quotes. When giving a general lecture, there is a certain amount of it's expected that the hearers will have a certain amount of faith that the speaker knows his subject matter and is speaking sincerely and honestly without an agenda. And there may be questions, and then again, if someone brings up, yes, I mean, we don't generally talk about astrology that much, but you may do if you're reading a purport in which Srila Prabhupada, right in the first canto, he mentions in relationship with Parikshit Maharaj, the birth of Parikshit Maharaj, how the astrologers were called. Again, in the 10th canto, in between, maybe also, that just comes to my mind now, in the 10th canto, in connection with the birth of Krishna, third canto, Devahuti? Oh, yeah. Srila Prabhupada mentioned in the purport, doesn't he? Yeah. So, the speakers, they should know their stuff. Okay, the next hand I saw was Balakrishna, then I'll go to you. There is time. No, there's no real need to. That's just the story. Srila Prabhupada chastised him for taking photos. He became very upset and wandered the streets of Durban, I believe it was, throughout the night and came back in the morning. There's not, the point is there. You can, I'm not sure where it appears. You can, some story. The essence of this, of the anecdote, is that Srila Prabhupada didn't like it. Of course, in those days, the particular camera that Bhargava Prabhu had was one of these clunk, clunk, clunk. They make a noise every time. But to have flashes in your face is also not very desirable. And to have, others may not mind, but personally, when I'm speaking, I try to concentrate and hope that others will also. And someone moving around taking photos means they're not concentrating, and they may distract others also. Please. Unity in diversity, complexity of principles. We should always choose Krishna. We should always be in Krishna consciousness, yeah. Unity and diversity can be cited as an excuse for being in Maya in the name of Krishna consciousness. I've spoken in these sessions in what is overall quite a vague way, because if you're trying to give principles, but if you come down to details, then it can be quite divisive. You're talking about unity and diversity, but when we get down to discussing details, it can be quite divisive. For instance, if some devotees say, well, to spread the movement, we shouldn't be very strict on rules, let everyone come and chant, and don't emphasize all the fourth regulative principle too much, and if the people don't like Indian music and they like Western classical music and they like Western clothing, which is in the mode of goodness, although I don't see how Western clothing is in the mode of goodness. It's made in Chinese sweatshops exploiting people. So, and it's a mass industry, worldwide industry. Where's the mode of goodness? But there may be, relax the standards and then let people come and join. But then it may be seen that that's opening, by lessening the restrictions, that's opening to personal preferences and personal sense gratification. It may be seen by others like that. And thus, diversity can lead to divisiveness. Very big question. Srila Prabhupada said that the leading members of the movement should come to Mayapur every year to discuss how to practice Krishna consciousness, unity and diversity. At that time, within Srila Prabhupada's movement, there was much divisiveness between leaders, but it wasn't generally over principles or approaches to preaching and practicing Krishna consciousness. It was more over power, position, men, money, and this and that. I'm generalizing. There were some issues also, like the road show, in which devotees made some drama with rock music. And as far as I know the history, which is related differently by different devotees who were present, they had their different impressions. There are some letters from Srila Prabhupada in this regard, but it seems that initially Srila Prabhupada liked this, but after some time a letter is there. He said, I can't remember it exactly. I guess it would be a useful idea to have a tablet and just bring out the letter exactly each time. He said, There's no need of this nonsense roadshow. We are simple Hari Kirtan men. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spread Krishna consciousness just with mridanga and kartals and Hari Kirtan. We don't need all these things. Because some devotees say, oh, it's great preaching. People love it. The public really like it. And others are saying, hey, it's getting a bit wild there. It's like a rock concert with heavy music, heavy electric guitars and bass and loud and drums and all this. So that was one issue over, you could say, philosophical, behavioral, but a lot of the divisiveness in our movement was over who gets to different areas, yeah, areas and manpower and money and this, yeah. Radha Damodar was the biggest divisive thing, yeah. But there are a lot of issues there in the Radha Damodar issue, that it was taking men and manpower and also undermining the authority of the temple presidents, who are mostly all grihasthas, by saying they're all useless grihasthas, you can't make any advancement with them. So there were, it wasn't easy being the acharya of the Hare Krishna movement. Srila Prabhupada often asked, please relieve me of this burden of management. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.